You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is John DePetty, and I'm here to welcome you to what's turning out to be an eventful day. We had a car parked at the front steps there for a while. It turns out that, and we had the security alarm. So Greta looked after that, and so we don't have to worry about the police interrupting our service this morning. Oh, there were two of them in the back of them, so we're safe today. So, as we do every Sunday before our service, we humbly acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations, which lands were previously occupied by the Huron-Wendat Nations. So welcome, especially welcome to any newcomers that are here today. And we do have a couple of, not newcomers, but a couple of oldcomers who have joined us once again. That's John and Anne McKechnie, who journey here almost every year from Scotland. So welcome. Nice to see you this morning. And of course they picked a good day to be here because today is our visitors and travelers lunch. So we have a little repast for you after the service. So please join us then.
When Peter gets back, Florence, if you could go to the next slide. I wanted to do things a little backwards in my thinking, which I think, according to John, means I'm a genius. the emphasis that we try here all the time in our personal lives, in our together lives, is about our relationships. And we have the directions there, the many directions, but encapsulated in our relationship with ourself, how we treat ourselves, how we are towards ourselves. Do we balance comfort for ourselves and challenge for ourselves? Do we care for ourselves well, and do we ask a lot of ourselves? And then our relationship with others, and that's always divided into the others we know and the others we may never meet, the first lot being a little more challenging than the second lot sometimes. And then, of course, the planet, and others would be that everything that lives on the planet and the planet. So it's all mixed up. It's not a formula. It's just a way of thinking. And so I thought the next slide, the first thing we often have to center on is that I have an impact in that web. Just that straight fact. And if I had to name one fact we center on, is that we have an impact in this web of life. And then when we gather together, the next slide, we want to have a positive impact. Because just because we have an impact, a lot of people know they have an impact, and they have a cruddy impact intentionally to gain. And so when we want to have a positive impact. And then because we celebrate how well we can do that, but we realize that we can do better, the next one is we want to have a greater positive impact. And so that was just a backwards way of getting to the next slide. I know I have an impact, and we phrase it grounded in life, because life is interconnected and we have an impact. And the next one is I want to have a positive impact, and that's guided by love. And I want to have a greater positive impact, and that's growing in wisdom. And it's just words we use, and you can change it. You never have to ever use them again, but it's a way of remembering our impact. And I want to have a good one, and I want to do it better. So just those are thoughts to think of as we move towards our sharing time.
We have one reading this morning, and it's words from James Baldwin. Fires can't be made with dead embers, nor can enthusiasm be stirred by spiritless people. Enthusiasm in our daily work lightens effort and turns even labor into pleasant tasks. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
Great save back there. Steve, I'm going to introduce you, but just briefly. Many of you know Steve. He's a passionate voice for justice in so many different areas. Lived his life in the field, working for the Canadian Auto Workers, which now is known as Unifor, which is now making a case to the United Church of Canada about what has been going on in relation to West Hill and I. But Steve has always taken that work beyond just the work that he did in his workplace, has stood side by side with Indigenous peoples as they have faced bulldozers who are preparing to destroy their land and turn it into housing, has worked tirelessly to bring education and its joys to children of immigrant families who are struggling with language, and has supported those who have gone to kindergarten without English as their first language and who are struggling in high school as well. The passions that he have allowed him to be part of the support of Syrian refugee families in the neighborhood where he works, and to continue to advocate for Indigenous people. So I welcome him here. I've told Don Francis that he is to blame for today's message. Don spoke passionately and so in such an inspirational message on August 5th that helped us to see and understand the dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima and subsequently on Nagasaki in a different light. And it was profoundly moving. But during that, he called our minds to remember the story in Genesis that lays out for the people of the world that God disappointed that Adam ate an apple and that Eve had given it to him, decided that he would banish them from the garden and force them to work all of their days, which was considered punishment. But Steve is going to suggest perhaps otherwise, and thank you, Don, for the inspiration.
So if it's all Don's fault, then of course. Okay, so tomorrow is Labor Day, and I'll be down at City Hall at about 8:30 in the morning to meet the contingent from my union, to see the members of my union and the people that I used to work with and march with them somewhere. I think we're marching down to the waterfront. And so Labor Day, of course, is the day that we're celebrating the contributions of millions of workers in thousands and thousands of occupations make to our society, to our well-being. And so it seems fitting that we should have at least one service a year to acknowledge what that's about. Now, when people think of coming to a church on Sunday morning, they usually don't think about work. They usually want, so what are we going to talk about work? Why are we going to talk about work? I want a spiritual retreat. I want a refuge. I don't want to be thinking about the working world, the labors of everyday life. I'm going to suggest to you that there are spiritual dimensions to the work that we do, to the labors of everyday life. And I'm going to try to expand on those things. And I'm going to suggest to you that if our notion of spirituality did not include those dimensions, the dimensions of work that are inspirational, then we would have an impoverished, indeed a very impoverished notion of what spirituality is. So, over the years in my union, members would say to me, I've said this before, I always enjoy repeating this, Steve, you always got, they would say to me, Steve, you always got good stuff, except that we never know where you're going or how long it's going to take for you to get there. So I learned from them, give people an argument that you're going to present and then give them signposts on how you're going to get there. Well, you've heard my argument that I think that the world of work offers us many, many things that we can reflect on, spiritual things that we can reflect on. And my signposts are, I'm going to have four of them, so I'll number them, 1 to 4. And when I get to 1, you'll know I'm at the beginning. And when I'm at the 4, you'll know I'm almost at the end, except that I got an epilogue. Okay, so you can relax. You can relax. You say, yeah, I know where this guy's going. Okay. So what are the 4 signposts? Number 1 is the hopes and aspirations of our children. And the hopes and aspirations we have for our children. Signpost number 2 is the unrecognized and uncelebrated acts of solidarity and support that workers offer each other on a daily basis. Things that are not necessarily written up in history books, but just occur. And signpost number 3 is the integrity of work. Of people living up to the standards of their profession. The people honoring their craft. And doing a job the way it's supposed to be done. And signpost number 4 is hard to get across, but it has to do with mind, body, and spirit being in some kind of harmonious unity, synchronized unity, mind, body, and spirit, muscle and brain and spirit together. And then I've got a little add-on at the end, and I'll call it Steve's Big Idea, inspired by a member of my union, who I'm going to give credit for. I'm going to give him credit for for making me think of something that you're about to hear for the first time ever. Never before have I ever shared this idea with anybody. So you're the first. Okay, so what's signpost number 1? Well, I was fortunate in my life, as many of you were, to have a job that was very interesting, writing curriculum, developing courses, engaging with workers in the classroom and educational environment. But that was only part of my life. I had jobs where I thought I had died and gone to a very bad place. when Adam and Eve were expelled from Eden, that was sort of like a lateral career move. They went east of Eden, right? They went east. They didn't go down. I've been in places where I thought I had gone down to a very bad place. But then, of course, I had the opportunity to work for the union. Well, not everybody's job is, frankly, that rewarding. Some of it is monotonous drudgery. And yet, millions of people go to those jobs every day. And I call it quiet, uncelebrated heroism. Because the reason why they're going is so that their children will have a better future. And I remember an auto worker. I had occasion to talk to thousands of members of my union over many years, sometimes in a very reflective environment. Our education center in Port Elgin, which the union calls the family education center. So, because we had a family education program where people could bring members of their whole family there for a vacation for 2 weeks. The only obligation was they had to attend some classes in the morning, so we could have some discussions about issues, like we do in this church, actually. The kinds of discussion we had this morning about various issues remind me very much of the kinds of discussions we had in our family education program. And so you have an opportunity to listen to people talk about the meaning of their lives and the meaning of their work in a more reflective environment. And I remember an auto worker saying to me, talking to me, his face was glowing with pride, when he talked to me about how his son had just got his first internship at a hospital. His son had become a doctor. And those wages that that auto worker earned in his life, you know, because the tuition to medical school is pretty high, right? That the wages that that worker earned were in part one of the reasons why his son was able to become a doctor. So all of his hopes and aspirations were really poured into the future of his children. And I think that if we reflect on that, we find something spiritual there. You know, some of you had some pretty monotonous jobs, some jobs that you didn't really want to celebrate, that you didn't find all that interesting, but you did them. Why? Why did you do them? Because you wanted your children. You wanted your children to have an opportunity not to work like that, to do something a little different. Okay, signpost number two. That has to do with the unrecognized, uncelebrated acts of solidarity and support that people offer each other on the job every day. You know, somebody's had a tragedy in their lives. You know, there's bereavement leave if you've lost somebody very close to you, and you should be able to get some time off work. But sometimes, you know, you have something happen in your life that there's no remedy for at work. You just have to go to work and you just have to deal with it. And other workers recognize that situation. They know something's up. And they come over and say, "Steve, come on, you know, take it easy. Go sit down. You know, we got the situation. We've got the situation covered. We got your back." Why did they do that? Because there is a basic human instinct, which the union calls solidarity, which you can call many, many other things. But when people do that, they are in a spiritual place. And it does happen. And it happens millions of times around the globe every day. And there will be times when a supervisor is humiliating somebody. And I used to say this when I taught shop stewards training. That's like the basic course that any union would offer. They'd always offer a union stewards training course. But I would say if you expect the union steward to solve every problem in the workplace, you are wrong. You are sorely mistaken. Sometimes the shop steward is not even working on your shift. They might be on another shift. They might be on another location. The workers have to stand together. They have to be prepared. They have to be prepared to stand up for each other. When the shop steward arrives, management is willing to take them on, ready to take them on. They know all about the union. They know all the arguments. And they're going to get into it. But when workers stand together, defending a worker is being humiliated. Management's got no answer for that. It totally baffles them. And it's a more effective defense of a co-worker than anything that a shop steward can do. Yes, the shop steward can file a grievance, take the case to arbitration, and all that good stuff. And we have a 50-50 chance of winning. A 50-50 chance of winning. But we almost always win when workers stand together. And so I call that I find in that a spiritual dimension to the work that we do in everyday life. There's also those acts of solidarity, which are, of course, hugely celebrated. You'll read about them in any union history book. I would be here all day and all next week if I told you about all those things that I've seen and experienced myself or read about. I'll just pick out one. We had a long strike at the mine mill local up in Sudbury had a long, long strike some years ago. It lasted about a year against a company called Xstrata, which used to be, they bought out Falcon Bridge. And in this day of modern communication, instant communication with anybody around the world, the members of the local union that were on strike were actually in communication with workers in other countries that worked for the same corporation. It wasn't just the leadership of the local union that was in touch with these other workers around the world who were working for this Swiss-based mining company, but the rank-and-file workers were also communicating with each other. And one of those groups was in Norway. And I don't think anybody really knows about this other than members of my union or members of Local 598. But the Norwegian workers that were working for Xstrata were so incensed by the way that their corporation was treating the workers in Sudbury, they did way more than anybody would ever expect. You know, you would expect them to just pass a resolution and send a donation or some pro forma protest. They shut down that company's operations in Norway for a week. For a week, they shut down their operations out of solidarity with Canadian workers. Imagine that. Imagine Canadian workers shutting down an operation for a week to support some workers on the other side of the world. That takes a high level of social consciousness. And those guys, those men and women, must have been in a very spiritual place to accomplish something. Anyway, I went up to Sudbury, and I had a chance to meet some of those. I had a chance to meet some of those Norwegian workers. And it's something I'll never forget. Because they sent a delegation over. And of course, they were hugely celebrated for what they'd done. Now, then there's the integrity of your trade, of your profession. And Scott talks about this a lot. I want to honor the things that Scott does with his grounded, guided growing, if I got those words right. He talks a lot about his work in the long-term care facility where he works. He uses examples from work to illustrate the points he's trying to make. That living up to the highest ideals of your profession, in this case, caring for others, in a stress time of life. Doing the utmost, doing the best job that you can. That's not just work. There is something that has to be inspired about that. Now, I could give you one incident that I used to read cases, like I used to read legal decisions, arbitration board decisions, judicial decisions, court of appeal decisions, mining. My wife reads lots of novels. I love reading these decisions, these legal decisions, because I found them more interesting than fiction. They were like little stories, and I would read them to find some case studies that I could use in courses, you know, that I was writing for workers. And I found one case that really resonated with me, and that was where at a yard, at a marshalling yard, a railway. I used to work for the railway, CN, Canadian National Railway. In a marshalling yard, you have trains being made up and sent out, right? And one day, at one of CN's yards, the dispatcher, the person who was supposed to be dispatching a train, saw that the consist or the manifest on this train was wrong. The way that the system, that the information they had on their system, just described the contents of the rail cars. That was incorrect. They didn't have the right information about the cargo. And so the dispatcher said, I've got to correct this before this train goes out. I've got to correct what's on the system, or else the conductor will have false information about the train that they're sending out. And the yardmaster says, no, the train's got to go out. I don't care. We'll fix it later. We'll fix the information later. He says, yeah, but what if there's a derailment? then an emergency crew comes and they won't have the correct information, and that could put their lives in danger. They won't know what they're dealing with. He said, no, send it out. He said, no, I can't. I can't do it. You know, it's not proper. So one thing leads to another, and the dispatcher ultimately exercises his right to refuse unsafe work under the code, under the labor code, and gets suspended for doing so, because it'll always be adjudicated later. And the case ultimately goes to the Canada Industrial Relations Board, and the union makes the argument, and the company makes their argument that the worker was talking about a hypothetical. He was speculating about a hypothetical situation. There was no imminent certainty of danger. And the union presented all kinds of information about how derailments happen all the time. This is maybe not a certainty, maybe not even a probability, but it's a possibility, and it's a very real possibility that a train can derail. So ultimately, the Industrial Relations Board ruled in favor of the worker, and the worker had to be made whole. But then I got to the last line of the decision, and then I was really taken aback. How was the worker made whole? The award in favor of the worker was paid to his estate. The worker, in this case, had died before he saw his day in court. But the union took the case to the board anyway because they wanted to establish the principle that that worker had done, the right thing. And also his surviving spouse was owed some money because the guy was suspended. You know, some pension benefits needed to be restored and you know, some lost wages. It wasn't a moot point. It was something that had to be done. So living up to the professional standards of your trade, doing the job properly, even when management is saying, just get the job out, you know, that shipment has to go. Don't worry about whether it's done properly. Just get it out. And your conscience dictates that that's not the right thing to do. And you do the job properly. That's because you're acting on what you know is right. And you're putting yourself at risk to do it. So if you're not inspired by some spiritual idea, then I don't know what spirituality means if it doesn't apply to that situation. Now, there's a fourth aspect of, this is my fourth signpost, that I can only describe by talking about mind, body, and spirit. That when you have that joyful situation we evolved to become very innovative, creative, ingenious creatures in our work. Experimental. This is the way we love to be. It's not in our nature to do monotonous, repetitive tasks, such as what an auto worker has to do on an assembly line. When you have the joy of having a job where you use your mind and body, muscle, and at the same time, you're also using your spirit. You're calling upon your spirit as well. That's why we have that expression, mind, body, and spirit. And I'd like to use an example of that right from our own minister. When our minister was, when we were reading the 94 recommendations of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, unbeknownst to us, our minister, Greta, was going home on that Sunday, or presumably the Sunday evening. She would get out some fabric, some strips of fabric, lavender-colored fabric, and write that recommendation that we read out that day in beautiful calligraphy with silver ink. And imagine if she messed that up, she had to start all over again. So there's this manual effort involved, you know, doing this meticulous handwork. There's the the intellectual effort of thinking about what the meaning of those words are, and there's the spirit behind it. When all those three things are in perfect harmony, you are in a very special place. And So spirituality can't be something extraneous, you know, like otherworldly, something that we do away from work. It has to be about what we live and experience every day in our lives, or else it has no meaning. I have another example, and I'm going to tell you a story about my younger brother. I went to visit him. He also worked for the railway. I worked for CN Rail. He worked for CP Rail. He was what they call a railway carman. They changed the name so it doesn't have any gender to it. Heavy duty mechanic on rolling stock. I don't know what the technical term now is for a carman. To me, he was always a carman. Anyway, I went to visit him at Christmas a few years ago. I knock on his door. He comes to the door. And instead of the usual greeting, "Merry Christmas, glad to see you, long time no see. How you doing, Steve?" He reaches out and he grabs me by my collar and he pulls me in. He said, "Come on downstairs, I want to show you something." And this is what he wants to show me. Can we pull up that slide that shows the... Can we show it? The railway engine? While you're working on that, I got a copy of it. I'm going to maybe pass it around. What he did, well, I'll describe what he had in his basement. He had a miniature, a replica steam engine. Now you say, okay, doesn't everybody have a steam engine in their basement? No. He had a working steam engine, one that you could actually put on the rails. You know, it goes out to the rail, where rail enthusiasts, railway enthusiasts gather. He can actually put this steam engine on the small miniature track, and it runs. It can pull a cargo. He said, okay, so he got the parts from eBay. He went on out, went to Amazon and ordered the parts and constructed them. Wrong again. You know how he got the parts for this steam engine? I'm going to pass this picture around because it's not coming up. You know how he made this steam engine? He showed me slabs of steel that he had bought, was standing up against the wall in his basement. From those slabs of steel, he machined the parts on a lathe that he taught himself how to use. He wasn't a machinist, that wasn't his trade, but he got out the whole protocol of the machinist trade and taught himself how to use that lathe, and he machined every part of that steam engine. Now that, if you ever get the picture, you'll see this huge smile on my brother's face when he's standing beside this steam engine. He had, from his imagination and from the blueprints for this steam engine, created something with his own hands from raw steel. Using a machine which he taught himself how to use. And when I talk to Pathway students, I suggest sometimes to Pathway students, I say, have you ever considered a trade? Like, not everybody's going to be a sociology professor at York University, you know. Have you ever considered a trade? Like tool and die making, or being a machinist, or an electrician, or a pipe fitter. And they say, oh, that's just dirty manual labor. I don't want to do that. And then I pull out this picture and I say, do you think you could do that? Do you know how much intellect is involved in doing what my brother did? And I saw the title of a book called The Zen. Now, there's a spiritual word for you. The Zen of Motorcycle Maintenance. And then I understood. I said, okay, somebody got the same idea. Somebody clicked on to the same idea that there is something spiritual happening when you are able to use your mind, use your body, and your spirit all together in one harmonious synchronized whole, holistic system. That has got to put you in a place that is about as good a place as you can ever be. Whether you get into a lotus position and contemplate your navel, I don't know. But if you can't get to a better place than when your mind, body, and spirit are in that harmony. So now I got to the epilogue. And I'm giving full credit to this idea to Bob McCready, who's a GM worker in St. Catharines. And he said to me one day as we were talking over lunch at our education center, he said, "You know, Steve, you know, my job is pretty tough, eh? It's pretty monotonous. You know, the cycle on an assembly line is every 44 seconds, or it was at that time, might even be less now. You know, and we just got to keep doing the same thing, you know, within that same 44 seconds, or else, you know, the light goes on, they come find out what's going on, and you could get hauled up on charges if you're slowing down production. So my job is pretty tough. Some days it gets to me. Some days it's worse than others." And he says, "You know what I think about on the days when it's really bad?" And I said, "What is it, Bob? Is it the higher pay, the shorter time, the increased vacation, the ergonomic mat at the union?" He says, "No, I think about the social justice fund. The fact that the union negotiated a social justice fund means that the General Motors has to pay a certain number of cents per hour into the union social justice fund, and then we use that money, the union, to support social justice projects all around the world." And I saw a film, he says, on one of the projects that we're funding, and it turns out that we're funding the effort to demine, to remove landmines from Mozambique. And he said, on those days when it's really tough, he says, "I think about the fact that a tiny, tiny, tiny infinitesimal portion of the wealth that I'm creating for that company every day is going to a situation, to create a situation where a child can walk to school in Mozambique without fear of being killed or maimed." I said, "Wow." I said, "Bob, that's a bit of a showstopper. That's what you think about on a day that's really tough?" I said, "Yeah." That was a day when my faith in humanity was restored. When that was a day that restored my faith in humanity. But it gave me an idea. It made me think. I said, Bob was onto something. By the way, last year I talked about Joe Hill. This guy, Bob McCready, is like the reincarnation of Joe Hill. He sings all of Joe Hill's songs. And he writes songs of his own. He's a great labor troubadour. Anyway, but Bob put on to me an idea that I want to share with you. What if we were to expand that thing that he was talking about? So we had a national community development fund, and a small portion, but a meaningful portion of the wealth that workers create every day has to go to that fund. And workers get to elect delegates to go to a national assembly and decide on how that fund is going to be spent. And there could be regional or local versions of the fund. Like part of it could be divided into, could be shared with local community development funds. And there might even be a small portion retained in each workplace so the workers wouldn't have to elect delegates. They could decide directly for themselves. Like at the Tim Hortons that Arlene and I stopped at this morning on the way here, those Tim Hortons workers might have $1,000 left in their fund at the end of the year. Those workers at Martin Grove and Rexdale, they'd have to have an annual meeting on company time, presumably, to decide how that $1,000 that's in their fund at the end of the year is going to be spent, and they get to decide. Imagine the debates that they would have. Well, should we buy an instrument for the music program at the local school? Because I hear that they're short of instruments for the kids that want to learn how to play music. Should we put a speed bump in the school zone so drivers will slow down when kids are trying to go to school? Should we support the local women's shelter? I hear they need some supplies. They'd have all these different ideas to debate. Imagine the spiritual dimension that would be added to work. If workers had to talk about these things every day, and where's that? What are we going to spend some of this wealth that we create every day? We're going to have to decide on how it's spent to improve society. The only thing they wouldn't be able to do is to just take the $1,000 and divide it up amongst themselves. They wouldn't be allowed to do that. They have to spend it on something that improves society, improves the world we're living in. But it was that thing that Bob McCreadie said to me one day about why he appreciated the fact that the union had negotiated this thing called the Social Justice Fund. It was that thing that Bob said to me that day that really got me thinking about this. So I really give him total credit for this idea. And I give you my commitment that I'm going to write this idea up and share it with Jerry Dias, the president of my union. And maybe something will come of it, maybe something won't, but it's something to think about. And so I hope that in my talk today that you have recalled incidents from your own life where you say, yeah, that's right. There was a day when we stood up for each other at work. Yes, I have been working all my life for my children so they don't have to do the job that I had to do. Yeah, there was a day when I said, yeah, listen, I have to do this job the right way. I don't care what management says. And there were lots of occasions when your mind, body, and spirit were in perfect harmony and you were in a very special place. And I hope that by talking about those things, you'll say, you know what, it was worthwhile to go to church that morning and actually talk about the one thing I want to forget about. Thank you very much.
Give you, yeah, the pictures. There are pictures going up there.
Did you see the picture of the rebellion?
Yeah.
Okay, now you know why my brother has such a big smile on his face. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I think Steve has brought it together for us in a very real way. The work that we each do can, if not on a day-to-day basis, like the many unionized workers that Unifor represents, from time to time, when we feel we're not getting the same meaning and sense of purpose out of what it is we're doing, and we feel that frustration, we find other ways to pull that in together. And Jerry Dias is one of the first people who wrote a letter to the United Church about what was happening in our process here at West Hill, a process that has, you know, taken much from us over these past 3.5 years in terms of energy and creativity and spirit, but a process that has also brought us together and allowed us to hold to one another in a difficult time and helped us see new ways that we can be together. So thank you very much, Steve, for sharing those perspectives with us. And I invite you to harangue him in the coffee time after, or in the meal afterward. I know he'll be happy to talk to you about some of those things. Oh, beautiful, yes. You go out into a world that, in which what you experience, what you eat, what you hold, what you touch, what you wear is made by someone somewhere in this world. And we are so interconnected, far more interconnected than we have ever been, as the story about the Norwegian workers brought home today. We have a task in being, you know, representing and speaking about and sharing our connection with and our commitment to those who work in this community and around the world, bringing us the lives that we know and hold. And as you go from this place, I invite you to do what our slide always says, watch each other away. We are watchers for one another. And Steve has spoken about that this morning. We are watchers. We are the ones who hold one another, who ensure that we are cared for and loved, that in times of tragedy and sorrow, we will be there for one another. So I invite you to watch one another away and hold to that watching throughout this week.
Listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.